I think you're a triathlete if you've done triathlon. That doesn't end. That doesn't make you not a triathlete. Just because you did one 10 years ago and you haven't done one in 10 years, you're still a triathlete because you've done that. Just because you've done one 10 years ago doesn't even mean that you need to continue.
And welcome back once again to the Endurance Hour Podcast, episode 393. Back alongside Coach Wendy Mader, I'm Dave Erickson. Glad to have you with us this week. We were off last week because I was out of town on a different work-related project. And Wendy is still doing her rehab, I think 5 weeks now since the knee was fixed. Is that right?
5 weeks from yesterday is when I broke it. Mm. 4 weeks from tomorrow is the surgery. So I'm at my 4 week mark for surgery, 5 weeks since I broke it. So I always count 5 weeks because that's how long I've been pretty much laying on the couch or the bed for, 20 hours a day.
That just hit me.
So yeah.
From the time that you injured it, you were under the knife about a week later, 7-8 days later.
Yeah, 9 days
later.
That's
quick. That's quick for a surgery.
It's not quick for this type of surgery because
not that type.
Because for this knee, I mean, the only way to start recovery was to attach the patella and start the recovery process. So for those 9 days, I wasn't healing at all.
Got it.
And so my surgeon is like, the surgeon that I ended up going with, I saw him, I broke it on a Wednesday. I saw him on a Tuesday and he's like, gosh, I wish I would have got you in last week. Because the recovery process. And in my mind, 6 weeks post-surgery is the first time I can do any weight bearing. So again, if I would have had surgery the day after I broke it, I would be on week six next week. And so in my mind, I'm on this time frame of get to that 6 week mark so I can try to do some weight bearing activities because my right quad, it looks like someone's arm. It's so small right now. It's atrophied so much that I wake up every morning and take my brace off and I'm like, oh gosh, it's so small. And my legs aren't big to begin with. So, started PT last week and I'm able to do some movements, contractions and hold it and, I'm able to do some stuff to prevent more atrophy from happening.
Well, you are on a timeline, and speaking of timelines, the clock is ticking on our big special for our triathlon programs. We are offering everything under $99 on Training Peaks for all of our triathlon plans, all of them, from Ironman, Half Iron, Olympic, Sprint. Every plan would be $99 or less. Obviously, the full distances are $99. Everything else is a little bit incrementally less, like $79 and $59 and so on. And what, $19? I can't remember which. But anyways, we only have a few more days left. Can you kind of just a quick summary? We sent out an email on Monday, as we do with our Monday discount codes. What is this deal? And we only have 3 days left on it.
So if you go to Training Peaks and type in Wendy Mader training plans on Training Peaks, it comes up with a list of plans. This deal that we're doing, like Dave said, is only for the multi-sport plans. We have Couch 2, beginner and advanced plans from Sprint all the way up to an Ironman. So the price you see on Training Peaks is the price without the 33% discount code. And to get that code, you can either go to the Endurance Hour as well as my website, T2 Coaching, and click on the 33% discount link and you will be emailed the code to use. You apply that code to the price that's on Training Peaks and then you'll see the Ironman distance training plans are $99 and everything below an Ironman distance is less.
So by going to t2coaching.com under training plans, the drop-down menu shows a 33% off Training Peaks code. Once you go to that, then it'll give you a page just to put your email address in so we can send you that code. That's how that works. And again, yeah, so what you see on the page is actually 33% higher, but when you use our code, all prices go down. And there's some specific race plans out there. And we are really into the heart and of the 2023 season. Races have already been done. Mm-hmm. I've seen some results. Some friends and former teammates have done really well. And I don't know, I kind of feel it now that the weather's getting nicer. Like, oh, this is when people would be in either peak shape or building up to an event. Is that time of year again? Do you feel that
right
in the air?
I don't feel it in the air because I spend most of my days on the couch and in bed, But I watched Iron Man Texas that happened this past weekend, and I saw some of our teammates from Timex. They're called a different name now. I can't remember. But yeah, I've seen some friends compete. I didn't have any athletes that I coach competing, but I did download the Ironman Tracker app. Again, I deleted it from my phone, but I wanted to track some athletes, and it was very fast this year. And so, you know, Oceanside happened, I think, 2 weeks ago. And so, yeah, things are happening. People are probably, most people are in their build phase to peak, you know, sometime late summer, early fall. Some people are probably in their base phase, foundation phase, if they're ready, if they're getting ready to peak for a late fall, like Ironman Arizona, California, or Florida. They're probably just starting a plan right now.
Yeah, I'm looking at our Endurance Hour YouTube page, and we started putting together some specific race plans. Like, for example, Arizona, we have a race plan for Arizona. So if you think about doing that race, we have a race, a run, swim, and bike course preview. And then below that, you can sign up and get the actual plan for that specific race. Same thing with Chattanooga, Wisconsin. There's also Florida, Maryland. And those are the most recent ones we have on the page. So we put together these previews. And then below each video, you actually can see how many weeks out the race is if you were to sign up now or want to get a 12-week plan, 16-week plan, or 24-week plan. Anyhow, those are out there. So if you are thinking something a little bit later this season, that's where you can find those on the page, as well as on the Training Peaks plan page as well under Wendy's thing. So get those if you want to do a race later this year for $99 or less. We do have some questions today and some other just general topics. The first one has to do with a gentleman who's getting ready to do his first half Ironman race. This is one of Wendy's athletes. And he's talking about something that we all come across every once in a while, is that when we wear our goggles and our cap at the same time, depends on how you put your goggles on, your cap could slide off. And he's been experiencing this a few times in his workouts. What's your general thought on wearing caps during practice, and then the whole idea of putting either your goggle straps under your cap, or maybe wear two caps to avoid slippage or losing your cap altogether?
Yeah. So again, as a competitive age group swimmer, swimming since the age of four, you know, up until now, I've never put my goggles underneath my cap, except maybe to just try it out once to see what would happen. And as soon as I dove in, I was diving in a pool, my cap fell off. So all of a sudden I had my goggles, but I didn't have my cap. So that wasn't ideal for me. And I'm like, well, I've always for 30 years put my goggles over my cap. So there's no reason for me to even make a switch because I've never had an issue with it. It is pretty common for, again, age group swimmers, probably some experienced multi-sport athletes, to put a cap on, goggles, and then another cap on. Therefore, in my experience, if the cap fell off, I still have a cap underneath my goggles. So that's probably what I would do. So you still have that backup cap in case the first cap falls off. Sometimes if you put a cap on, and if you're someone who uses product on your hair, a gel or a mousse that we used to use back in the 80s, then your hair is very slippery and that could cause your cap to fall off. You know, most races will supply you a latex cap. So maybe you want to put a silicone cap on and then put the race latex cap over your silicone cap, over your goggles. So there's a lot of different scenarios. Obviously, if you're going to plan on doing that for a race, you should practice with it, kind of see how it feels. If it's warm, then doing the double cap might not be a good idea because that might just create too much heat in your head, which is your extremity. You want to be able to release that heat, but you definitely need to wear a cap in the race. You don't always have to wear a cap in practice, but if you are going to swim open water, for safety's sake, it's good to wear a swim cap. So if there's going to be any boat or any people out there, they can see you coming. And the universal sign of distress when you're in a race is to take your cap off and wave it.
I didn't know that part. I know just waving for help. And nowadays they have so many kayakers for safety that I didn't know you could just wave your cap. I never thought of that one before.
No, waving the cap is you're saying more than just hi. Your cap's off and you're waving your cap, and they can see caps are bright, colorful colors for a reason. They can, a kayaker is more likely to be able to see that color waving rather than, a bare hand color.
Now, Now, what do you do if, and I've seen this before, whether it's Hawaii, you know, in Kona, where some people come out of the water and they don't have a cap on, whether it's slipped off or maybe they put the goggles on underneath and the cap just kind of slipped off and they go, I can't deal with it. I'm just going to pull it off. As long as I have my goggles, I'm good to go. And you're not going to get penalized for that. At least I've never seen anybody get penalized for it. But I've also seen in other scenarios covering races where someone's cap starts to slide up their forehead. Uh-huh. The goggles are on, but the cap slides up their forehead, whether it's a silicone, which is a little slippier, more slippy, versus the silicone, which I don't know, they seem to slip easier than the, what's the other kind?
Latex.
Latex seem to stick better. The silicone is smoother. Am I wrong?
Yeah.
And those would come off. But what do you do and how do you adjust to that if you're in the open water in a race and your cap is uncomfortable, you can feel it coming off, but it's kind of hard to stop and like, you know.
Well, that happened to me. That happened to me in 2009 in Kona, and I had about a 1K left and my cap was slipping off my head. And mm-hmm. again, I had my goggles over my cap and it was just slipping. I think that was the year I definitely got kicked and punched and probably it got loose early on in the race. So throughout the nature of the race, it just kept slipping off and it got to the point where it was hanging on the back of my head. My goggles were keeping my cap hanging on the back of my head. And that felt like it was dragging and that was uncomfortable. So I stopped for a second, pulled the cap off and just let it go. And then, or I didn't maybe mean to let it go, but I saw it actually floating down to the bottom and I was able to continue to swim because I had my goggles.
Yeah.
So that was just an instant that goggles were over the cap. I lost the cap, but I didn't lose the goggles.
It's gonna be tougher with girls with their longer hair,
long
right?
Hair.
Or
yeah,
does it help because you have the grips better? I don't know.
Well, I braid my hair for races, so I was very thankful that my hair was braided and it wasn't just having this long hair providing all this drag for me. But in swim practice, I don't usually have braids in my hair. And I think the way I stuff my hair when it's long on my cap with the bulkiness in the back, for me, I feel like that keeps the cap on my head better. Mm. So it all depends on how long women's hair are, how thick it is, and how they bun or ponytail their hair up in their cap. If the bun is up on the head, I think that's worse. I think you need to keep it behind your head.
Good little tips, realistic tips. Always been a concern about fogging. Some goggles have never fogged on me and some would fog up pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. What do you tell people about recommendations for open water swimming when your goggles fog up or how to avoid that happening?
So I always recommend number one, if you tend to have foggy goggles in training, then buy a new pair and only use them race day. Because if they haven't been worn yet, they're less likely to fog. Number two, what I discovered at a race in Boulder, I put my goggles on and I kept the seal. I didn't keep like putting them on my forehead or doing this or rubbing them. I just put them on. I kept the seal and they didn't fog. And so I just discovered that kind of randomly. Mm-hmm. And so I've been able to use that trick for myself for future events. And when I coach open water swim clinics, I'm always advising athletes once the goggles are sealed, try not to touch them. If you do, and they do get foggy and you don't, I've never used anti-fog in my life. If they happen a lot to you, you can buy some Johnson's baby shampoo works, or usually if you spit, mm-hmm. rub the spit or lick your goggles and then mm-hmm. don't touch them. Mm-hmm. You don't need to rub it in and then keep getting them wet. You just rub them, spit in them, put them on your head, seal them. That will help prevent fogging.
It's always a challenge when they give you time to do a warm up and you go out there and swim a little bit. Mm-hmm. You come back and you're sitting on the beach for a little while or you're standing in line. I don't want to keep my goggles on the whole time. I can't see that well. So I put them on my forehead, but then I'm aware like I need to, you know, a little something to wipe the inside of it out. And so, yeah, a little spit or something like that.
And other things I've done in mid race, if they're foggy, sometimes if it's a foggy day, that's going to help fog your goggles or glasses for that matter on the run course. I'll really quickly. I'll open up my goggle underwater just so it gets a little tiny bit of whatever lake or ocean water in it. So then that swooshing around of a little bit of water keeps them clearer than if that water was not in the goggle.
That reminds me, every once in a while, doing laps, one goggle would have water in it. And so I just closed one eye and swim with one eye open so that water would keep on getting to my eye.
Yeah.
That's a little pain in the butt until you get to the wall and then you can like, oh, I need to change my goggles out. You know, with Texas, I don't remember. I didn't follow it. I just saw some results or some people posting photos. Mm-hmm. That can be one of those hot, humid races. Mm-hmm. Which brings us up with this time of year and future races, that there's a good chance that, depends where it is, that there's going to be some, you know, warmer conditions on the bike and the run. And that comes, that brings me to the point of bringing food with you or planning certain types of food that won't melt or won't get all squishy or yucky during the race. People will say, hey, I'm going to bring maybe a sandwich with me or in my special needs bag. Uh-huh. Can you imagine that special needs bag sitting out in the sun for 5 hours, 6 hours, waiting for you to get there? And then you pick it up and it's gross. It's like, I'm not hungry for this at all. What do you tell people about the types of foods that will last and which ones won't to prepare for some of these warmer races?
So a lot of athletes who I've coached, like they're called Uncrustables. They're, you know, I've never had one, but I think they're the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches that you keep in the freezer. So if they're frozen and you put them in a special needs bag frozen, then they'll maybe last a little longer. I used to do, this was back in, I don't know, I think it was like early 2000s. I used to drink Boost and Sure.
Oh yeah.
And during my training, and it was going really well for Ironman. So I put one in my special needs bag in Kona. And then by the time I got there, it was so warm. I'm like, I can't drink this. This is disgusting.
Yeah.
So I'm able to, I have a gut of steel. I'm able to rely on other nutrition out on the race course, even though I haven't tried it before. I'm lucky that I can do that. Normally you don't want to try anything new nutrition on race day, but I'm one that has, and I've been successful with it. So you always want to have a backup plan. I think if you're carrying a sandwich, if you want to eat that on the bike, you should carry it with you on your body, whether you're going to wear your jersey. I stuff things up my short pants. Sometimes I stuff things down my sports bra to carry stuff and eat it early on before it gets a chance to maybe melt, because I could see a sandwich being a little bit maybe soggy or, you know, not so much edible than if you just ate it the first thing in the morning. But that's why they make energy products. Energy bars are meant not to melt. They're meant to last. They have the consistency, whatever the product or whatever the ingredients are. So it's just, that's why they have the energy products, energy gels, energy chews, rather than real food, because real food's more likely to spoil in some way, shape, or form. But I don't recommend trying to keep it cold in your transition bag or your transition area, because your transition area is small. You don't really want to carry a lot of extra stuff. So if you're gonna put something on your bottles on your bike or bottles in a special needs bag, make sure they're frozen. And don't do that if it's a cold day, because you don't want to have these frozen bottles and not be able to drink anything because they haven't thawed out yet. I've done that as well. So frozen stuff, but just always have a backup plan. So in your training, try multiple products, multiple different types of nutritional products, real food, energy type products, and so you know that you can rely on both. I always encourage athletes to look to see what's offered on the course and start there.
And then a little tip here is open the bag or the product before you go out in the course.
Good point.
You know, those chews or those power bar gels, which are wonderful. I love those. The waffle stingers, I love those too. But if you pre-open them or rip them open, be a lot less stress when you're in an aero position or you want to sit up and you're trying to open up a bag with one hand or just tear it with your teeth. Just one more challenge that you don't need to focus on.
on the bike. And they're done that. I understand.
Yeah.
And that brings up, if you don't know this already, the water bottles or Gatorade bottles that they hand you at the aid station should be open. You should not have to open it up, tear off the plastic top, and then close it again. I've actually had that question a lot by athletes. Again, athletes who are new, have never done a race, they don't know. Mm-hmm. But there could be an occasion where there is one that has the plastic on it, but that's not the norm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That brings up people running with water in their hand. In one of those bottles that are almost shaped to your hand, like a handheld water bottle. I don't, for me, that's never been something that I've wanted to do unless whatever I'm holding is a solution.
Right.
It's a combination of calories and a flavor that you're okay with, like a small flask that you just squeeze in for that has calories versus a full handheld bottle. I remember it was at Andy Potts years ago. People probably don't know, maybe some people don't know who Andy Potts is now because he hasn't raced for a while. Actually, he won 70.3 Worlds early on. Uh-huh. And a longtime Ironman champion. Does he still race? I don't know. I'm not sure at a high level.
I haven't heard the name. I don't think so.
A top 10 finisher in Kona for the longest time for Americans. Big, tall athlete. Anyhow, he would, I think it was it Newton maybe? I forget. There was a handheld water bottle he'd always promote. He turned it upside down. It was like a Newton or an N on it somehow. Anyways, he would run with these things, but I don't know if it was just sponsored by it or actually he had a lot of fluid in it, but he would run with it. I always thought, dang, that seems really, really challenging to, unless you have to switch hands, because if you always have something a little bit heavier in one hand versus the other hand, you might want to switch it. I don't know. I've never thought of that as an efficient way to go.
Well, no, exactly. Me neither. And if you're racing a World Triathlon Corporation event, Ironman 70.3, they have plenty of volunteers. They have plenty of aid stations. So one reason you want to rely on what they're serving at the aid station is it's going to be cold. And if you decide that you're going to hold on to something or get, like we already said, get something at a special needs, it's going to get too warm. So I always encourage athletes to rely on the cold beverages that are going to be supplied at the aid station instead of relying on your own warm flask. One race that I did carry a flask, it's because I put gels in it. And it was in 2008, and I tried to sip on a gel instead of having a whole gel. I would sip on my flask every 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So over the course of an hour, I was probably intaking, you know, an entire gel or a little bit more. But I had trained that way and that worked well for me. But then it's probably the only race I did that because then I was all sticky and I ended up tossing the flask when it was empty. So then I ended up relying on the aid station gels. And when I relied on those aid station gels, I would just sip, you know, a quarter amount of it. And then I toss it and wait to the next aid station. So I felt like I was wasting gels because I wasn't taking the whole thing in at once, but it was just too much for my body to try to consume one all at once.
Okay. I found a picture of him with it and it's, I can't quite see what it looks like close. Oh, there it is. Nathan. That's what it was.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Nathan.
A Nathan water bottle.
Yeah.
That's what his water bottle, that's what he was holding. It's actually, he's holding it right now in Utah. I may have covered that race. At the US Pro Championship in St. George. Yeah, so he would hold that thing, and it could hold a gel because it has a little zipper bag on it too. That's not that. It's a good size. It's not that big of a flask. Could be 6 ounces. Not quite sure, but it won't stay cold for long, but it's something that might be the nutrition he needs or is familiar or comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it was. He'd also, very smart, I can't remember. Is it Asics maybe? He would take his shoe off and hold his shoe when he crossed the finish line. I mean, he won a lot of races. So if he was first one up there, he'd just hold a shoe and like, what a great sponsorship opportunity right there. Like, I'm taking my shoe off and this is why I ran so fast, you know?
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, he would do that. He's I heard years ago through somebody who either was involved in him as an agent or a marketer said, he was a million-dollar athlete, meaning he would earn $1 million a year through a combination of sponsorship and winnings, more so sponsorship because you see him. He's like a NASCAR racer with his jerseys, a lot of athletes are. But I remember years ago, it's at Timex, by the way, we were coming back and there was a person in our van who was saying, I know someone who's his agent and he is a million-dollar athlete.
Wow.
It's like, wow. But he's a business. You know, Andy Potts as a business, not only is he talented and successful triathlete, but he is he markets. And so, and that's just Andy Potts, not to count, you know, can you imagine other bigger names that you're familiar with on their earning potential? So it's a very small percentage that make real money as triathletes. And it's not at races, it's in sponsorship and coaching and other elements. Yeah. So if you have any aspirations of becoming a pro triathlete to make a career out of it, it is a tall mountain to climb and there's not a lot of room on top, just to be realistic with it. All right. Next question here. A question here, I should say. We've been just kind of talking here. This is from Jonathan, who's following our beginner Ironman 70.3 plan. And he's racing for Maine. His race is July, end of July. And he's about wondering about altering his triathlon plan. So this go around, I like to set it up to really shoot for a solid race. He's got his Garmin. Any recommendations for training to follow certain metrics more accurately? Do you follow what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Here? So I follow, again, whenever an athlete does ask questions, I follow up with them just to get a little bit more information. So he did Maine last year, but he didn't follow a training plan for it. So he's hoping to, if he follows a plan, he's hoping to be more prepared and be more successful, however he defines success. And he purchased our plan, thank you. But I think he was already 2 weeks behind on the plan, because I think he purchased a 16-week plan and he's 14 weeks out, or, you know, that type of scenario. So, you know, when anyone purchases our plan on Training Peaks, I always recommend that they load it to end on race date. So they load it to their Training Peaks calendar to end on race date. And if they're not quite ready to start it yet, but they want to follow a plan, maybe they repeat the first 4 weeks. If they have 20 weeks and they purchase a 16-week plan, then maybe they repeat the first 4 weeks before the 16-week plan starts, or follow a single sport plan. And if their weakness is swimming, maybe they swim extra the first 4 weeks until their plan starts. So we kind of talked about that alteration. And then, you know, if someone is following a plan, I just spoke to another female, I think her name was Lisa. She, our plans usually are anywhere between like 6-8 up to 12 hours a week. If it's a 70.3 plan, she only has like 6 hours a week. And so she was asking me how to alter her plan to be successful. Oh, this is, you know, she's doing an Olympic distance. So I just told her, you know, the key workouts. If you're one of those who can't fit in all the training, then there's certain key workouts that you should fit in. Number one, you have to be able to go the distance. You have to be able to swim the distance, bike the distance, and run the distance. So make sure you can do that before race day. Number two, the other key workout is the running after bike. So the brick workout or the transition workout, they mean the same thing. You want to get a feel of how your nutrition and hydration went on the bike and how that's going to carry you through the run. And the reason they call it a brick run is because your legs feel like brick, especially if you're new to this and you've never done it before. So those are really key workouts that you don't want to skip in your plan. There's, you know, if you're a strong swimmer, well, you know, back off all the swim workouts. If you're a strong cyclist, back off on the cycling, same with the running. So, you know, work on your weaknesses, bring them up to your strengths, and make sure you hit those distances if you've never done them before, and make sure you follow those transition workouts.
So that was a bit combination of Jonathan asking a question, and there's also Kim, who is bouncing back and forth between how many hours a week do I have, how many hours a week does the plan require, how do I add other things to complement or to make up for missing certain things.
Yeah, and just to throw this out there and remind people, if you purchase any one of our plans on Training Peaks, it doesn't have to be the multi-sport plan. You can set up a free consultation with me, whether you want to do it Skype, Zoom, or just over the phone, and we can answer your questions over the phone as well and just make them a little bit more personalized to you.
And the plan can be reapplied. Once you have the plan, it's yours. It's not just one and done and you can't use that plan again. You can, depends on the type of membership you have with Training Peaks, is that right? Can you reapply that plan to the following year? Or like I did Maine this year, I want to do Maine next year. Let me use the same plan that I already paid for and I can just change the date.
Yeah, you can unapply and reapply a plan at a different date. I think you may need a premium Training Peaks subscription to be able to do that. When you purchase a plan on Training Peaks, you sign up for a basic plan if you want it for free and don't want to pay for it. The benefits, there's definitely more features you can use with a premium account, such as adjusting workouts, sliding them. You know, you can't swim on Mondays, but you can swim on Thursdays, so you can easily slide the workouts to the days you're able to do them. It's about, I know in the past it's been like $120 a year, which I think is a worthwhile investment if you're someone who needs to alter the workouts as far as what days of the week you can do them and you're constantly trying to switch workouts around. I think it's really important when you're following a plan that you do keep the training log and you do switch the workouts around to the days you're going to do them. You don't want to do Tuesday swim on Friday and not note it on Training Peaks. I think the benefits of looking back to seeing what you do on the proper days allows you, gives you a bunch of feedback so you know if it works or didn't work. Because if you look up back at a plan that you didn't keep any log notes or didn't download any data to know if you really completed them or not, or rated it as anything subjective, then you're looking back at something and not remembering everything positive that helped you along your journey, as well as things maybe you struggled with that you want to change for next time, or you know, okay, you don't need to do that type of workout anymore. That's one of your strengths. So there's just a lot of good things that come when you're keeping your own log and doing the workout on the day that you're able to do it.
I'd say definitely upgrade to a premium account. I'm looking at a price right here. It's $125 a year, but if you, and the free account is, you know, it's somewhat limited because you can plan future workouts. You can track your performance on the premium plan. Mm-hmm. You can add notes, reminders, and updates. You can edit your completed workouts. You can search and filter workouts. And you can work with a coach on either one of these, but dragging and dropping your workouts, tracking the performance. And I like being able to see the data from old workouts. It is so important. And I don't, do we have any discounts with Training Peaks? Do they offer discounts?
They do. They usually, they're usually their biggest offers during the holidays, sometime between November, December, and January. They're usually like 20 or 30% off a year subscription. If you're a member of USA Triathlon, I know in the past, if being a member of USA Triathlon, you were given a discount code to Training Peaks as well. And then sometimes your local club, if you belong to a USA Triathlon club, then that club can usually get certain discounts to whatever USA Triathlon is partnered with. And normally it's a Training Peaks account.
It's invaluable. It's invaluable. It's 11, it's $10.50. It's $10, $10 a month for $125 a year. It's, if you're a triathlete and you're doing these races, this is a small price of all the prices that you pay. This is a small price. This is very helpful. I get it no matter what. Plus your coach can work with it too. And anyhow, So last time we talked, I was getting ready for a big purge, like a fitness clothing purge and outfit purge. And I went downstairs of all my bins and I got rid of some stuff. I got rid of some old wetsuits that I remember getting some free stuff. Like, this doesn't fit anymore. And some clothes didn't need. It's like, that whole philosophy of love it. Does it bring you joy or does it not bring you joy?
Yeah.
And it was, it's like, I haven't seen this one for a while. Bye-bye. But there are some, I have so many backpacks that have the event on it that I just can't get rid of because it brings me joy. It's a good memory. It's like, here's a world championship backpack when I used to cover the races as a reporter, not as an athlete. I haven't done any Ironman. I haven't done any world championship races as an athlete. Probably never will, but I have these race bags. I just can't drop. I'm not going to drop them.
No, brand spanking new. I have all my race bags usually packed into one bag or two bags, and they're up in my attic. Because I'm not ready to purge them yet, but they're up in my attic just deciding what I want to do with them. Yeah. There's one bag that I love. It's an Ironman Kona bag. I think it's from, I don't know. It's not from 2022. And then the last time I was there was in 2018 because that's the last time I was there. I was there in 2017 and then I was there again in 2022. And I love it. And it's just a solid quality bag and it's my color and it's something that I currently use. It's a bag that I thought I'd want to save because it's a quality bag and it's my color. But at the same time, I'm like, this is the best quality bag. I'm going to use it. And so I'm currently using that one. But all of my other bags are packed into a bag.
I found some shirts, some polos. And I want to wear that again. But it stank because it was spent in a box for I don't know how many years. So I just washed it. It's like, I'll wear this again. The thing is, with all these shirts, these polos, or these jackets, and these sweat outfits, or whatever, it's like they're fine. They've been barely worn, but they stink because they just fit in a box for a while. Why aren't I wearing these things? Just because I'm not trained for anything specifically, I got this really cool blue 70 top and bottom that I bought because there's a good deal on it. But I, didn't have pockets, but it fit great. It's like, it's good quality. It's barely been used.
Right.
What am I doing with this? So there's some things I got rid of. And you can't do that right now because you can't really move around much, right?
Right. No. So, I mean, my purging has been unsubscribing from junk email so much. And a lot of the unsubscriptions right now have to do with nutrition, nutrition, hydration for triathlon, or race director emails about future races. And I'm just unsubscribing from them because I'm not doing that stuff right now. If I want to in the future, then maybe I'll resubscribe to another product that I might start using again, or another ultra sign up, or, something like that. But right now I'm like, I don't want that stuff on my mind. It's creating wasteful energy that it's gotta go. Like I said in the beginning, I deleted my Ironman tracker app, and then I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch text a few people in Texas, and then I'm going to get rid of it again because I've no desire to have this, these emails from Ironman or these texts from Ironman about what's going on based on their Ironman tracker app.
Well, let's finish off with this kind of, I don't know how long this will last, but we were beginning to talk about this off before we press record about what do you tell someone who is like, I just don't have the fire anymore. I've been doing this for a while and now I need to take a break, but there's nothing about this that gets me excited. And I'm torn between, am I still a triathlete or is it over? Will I come back to it? How do you navigate it? Have you come across athletes who you've coached for years or just like, oh, they checked it off the box, they leave, or the person who goes, I'm all in. And then not one day, but all of a sudden it's like, you know what? I don't know if I want to do this anymore. Have you come across that?
I have. And I think you can be you're a triathlete if you've done triathlon. That doesn't end. That doesn't make you not a triathlete just because you did one 10 years ago and you haven't done one in 10 years. You're still a triathlete because you've done that. Just because you've done one 10 years ago doesn't even mean that you need to continue. So, we kind of get into this identity of people identifying themselves as an ultra runner or a triathlete or multi-sport athlete, a CrossFitter, a Spartan racer, a marathoner. There's these lot of labels that people carry with them when they're in a certain sport. And some people may be too tied to that identity. So when they're feeling like they want to take a break or want to purge the items of stuff that they've collected based on participation in their sport, if you feel bad about that, you shouldn't. And that's something that, again, I'm not the person that knows exactly how to speak to it, but then you're tied into some sort of identity crisis or you're identifying yourself with something like doing an Ironman. And if you're struggling with letting it go, then you got to dig deep into what's your why, what's your reason, what brings you joy? Why don't you want to let that go? Why do you feel like you need to continue with the sport? I think people forget that many of us get into our sport, whatever that is for health and fitness and wellness. And you can still be healthy, fit, and well, and not have to participate in events. You find an activity you like to do, you do it. You continue to eat well, maybe a little bit different than you ate to fuel your body for like a multi-sport. And you continue to get strong because we need healthy bones. We want low cholesterol. We want low blood pressure. We want to be healthy, and activity and healthy eating is part of that. But that doesn't mean you have to do a sport to do that. That just means you just have to kind of get into being like a regular, normal person, such as myself. I haven't done anything in 5 weeks, and I actually have done stuff in 5 weeks. After a couple of weeks, really a week after surgery, I listened to this audiobook called Built to Move, and it reminded me how I just have to go out for 30 minutes a day. That's a normal thing to do. It's a normal amount of activity for people who aren't into health and fitness. I have to continue to eat right. I have to stretch. I have to strength train because I'm 50. I'm menopausal. My bones are weak. I found out I have osteoporosis. through this whole fracture thing. So some positive kind of came out of having a fracture, but I don't want to stop being mobile because I'm going to fall again and maybe break a hip. I have weak bones. I have to take care of that because I want to be as healthy as possible as I age. And I think people forget that. I think people like us who've been tied to a sport for so long forget that we can still be healthy and well and not be into a sport. I think that's really important. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I just answered your question, but it felt good to say.
No, it's wherever the question goes. Your answer is what your answer. I don't know. You look out and people who want to take a break and feel like, you know, is this the end or is it just a pause? And, you know, like you said, I don't need to disagree with you, but if someone who's done a triathlon 10 years ago hasn't done one since, I would say they're a former triathlete. But if you're actively, if you've done one every year, I'd say you're a triathlete.
They're a former triathlete. They're still they're still the triathlete in being a former triathlete.
Yeah, I did a triathlete 10 years ago, or I did one 5 years ago. Or I did an Ironman a couple of years ago. Oh, you're definitely Ironman for life. Yes. But I'm not, I'm actively an Ironman. I'm not training for an Ironman. Haven't hit the pool for, so many months or a year. Are you still a swimmer? Well, I used to swim. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I can swim. Or I haven't been out for a competitive bike ride. Like I was thinking, I haven't ridden my bike outside for a long time. I still spin, but I don't go outside. And because if I go outside, I wanted to, yes, there's an enjoyment part of it, but I want it to lead to something. And maybe that's my own upbringing of having a purpose behind the training. Like if I'm going to do a mountain bike ride, I know there's a benefit for strength that will translate into cycling for a triathlon. But if it's just,
well, and so the way I see that is you're going out for a mountain bike ride with the purpose of getting outside, getting some sunshine, getting some fresh air, getting some exercise. You're not trained. Again, the difference between training and training, then there's exercise. You're enjoying the bike that you own. You're just benefiting. I think it's so important for exercise for more mental well-being more than it is right now for physical well-being, but it's important, sticking a purpose to it. And again, for me, the purpose right now is health. It's just normal to be a healthy human being. I want to get back to activity first and foremost to be a healthy human being. And then maybe I'll get back into my sport. I'm multi-sport. It could be many things that I get back into. I just don't know I don't know what that's going to look like. And I'm not worried about it because I do like to be active, and me being active could just be going for an hour walk. And that makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. And builds your energy level versus
it builds my energy level. Definitely. I've been lethargic, really lethargic. I'm tired all the time from lack of activity.
Yeah.
And I don't like that feeling.
No. Same with food. I felt this a couple of days ago. I hadn't had spaghetti for a long time. I just had some noodles. It's kind of weird. I didn't have any sauce on it. I just had spaghetti, some butter, and some cheese, like Parmesan cheese. And that's what I had. I had it 2 days in a row.
Uh-huh.
And I started feeling really sluggish. It's like, I know pasta slows you down. I know it kind of fills you up. And
right.
But I wanted to have something. I just wanted something simple. I was like, I'll try some pasta for a while.
Uh-huh.
So, oh my gosh, that explains why I'm good, or my stomach feels bloated, or like, oh crap, that's why I don't eat pasta. Okay, I'll skip that next time. Same thing with bread. It's like, that's why I shouldn't eat so much bread.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, I don't want to continue on, just to continue on. So thanks for the questions and the topics that were submitted. And for those who want to submit a question in the future, what would you say is the avenues to send us emails or send us questions on social? What would you say?
Email first and foremost. Sometimes I get some questions on Facebook Messenger. Sometimes I get questions actually on Instagram Messenger. So any social media platform, email, comment below the podcast on YouTube or on iTunes, and we'll see it. So we'll be notified wherever you post a question. And sometimes I see questions on other social platforms, other social media groups, and I'm like, oh, that's a good question, even though it's not from someone that I know that's in our T2 Endurance Facebook group. It's a question nonetheless that I like to discuss.
Very good. Well, that'll wrap up episode 393. So you only have a few more days. If you've gotten to this point of the podcast, you know the big discount of $99 or less for our triathlon plans expires at the end of April. So May 1st is your last, once it hits that, it's done. They go back to regular price. So order now, get one, and just save it and just adjust it with your schedule in your Training Peaks calendar. That'll be a kind of a smart way to go. $99 or less for an Ironman triathlon plan with videos included. That's a steal. So that's over at Training Peaks under Wendy Mader, Coach Wendy Mader. For Coach Wendy Mader, I'm Dave Erickson. Thanks for listening. Have a great week of training, racing, and recovery. We'll see you back here next time. Adios.
Adios.